Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
All right, welcome back for hour number two, which I guess this is a good time for me to remind everybody, we actually do 4 hours of live radio every Saturday morning. We start at 8 o'clock right here on KTTH and go until 10. And then from 10 to noon, we're on another station in town. It would be tacky of us to promote another station. So what we do is we encourage you to go to our website, lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top right-hand side of the page.
That way we're only half tacky.
That's right. That's right.
But happens, we're not fully tacky.
We're not just fully tacky. But you can figure out where we are by going there. When you push the podcast button, you'll not only see where we are for all 4 hours, and again, it's live call-in, but you'll also have access to all of our previous shows. I think we go back like maybe even a year or two or so. So anyway, you can do that at our website, lmclinic.com, the podcast button at the top right of the page. And then I've done this before. I failed to give you a phone number if you want to make one of the free health analysis appointments, again, and get the 2 free tests and the $100 of free longevity supplements. If you don't have access to a computer, and a few of you don't, that's okay. You can call us at 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG. And we're not there now, but you can you could call and leave a message right now if you want, or you can call Monday morning and grab one of those free health analysis appointments. I should say, you've maybe heard me say this before, we do have a limited supply of them, but I've opened up the calendars through the middle of November, so that's very good news. So we've got some appointments for you, plenty, I think probably 15 or 20 or so in each of our 3 clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. All right? And grab one of those. And again, you can do it online, lmclinic.com, or you can call 866-86-YOUNG. And I think I better backtrack just a little bit. I don't want to leave our audience with sort of a sour puss attitude about naturopaths. We love naturopaths.
Absolutely.
We love naturopaths.
Again, everybody has strengths and weaknesses. I love the attitude and the openness of alternative methods that the naturopaths come to us with. It's just that if they're going to work with us, we need to fill in the other side of the equation.
Yeah.
But we do the same thing with the MDs. They
have
an area that we need to fill. So, again, I love the crosstalk. I love to have my MDs work with my NDs and vice versa because they each help each other to see the full picture.
And that's one thing about the doctors at Longevity Medical Clinic, sort of behind the scenes. Our doctors do have plenty of time to collaborate together, to work on individual patients, to sort of brainstorm together with difficult issues or circumstances. And the training is continuous. It's going on. The other aspect, if you're new to Longevity or this program, our doctor appointments at Longevity are an hour long. They're not 11 minutes like your the yeah. typical primary care physician. An hour. That gives our doctors enough time to actually teach, coach, and explain things, and it gives you time to ask your questions, as many as you'd like. I mean, it's, it is a wonderful thing. That's what Longevity Medical Clinic is all about. So God bless medical doctors. God bless naturopaths. We have them both as doctors and as patients at Longevity. Makes really good sense. All right. You know, you closed the door here because there are some noises down the hall, but I'm wondering if Dr. Umat is, well, she would text
I've been watching my
have
text.
Have you been watching?
Okay. Yeah, and she has
She's due soon.
She's not texted me yet.
Okay. She will be coming soon. She's probably listening to us in the car on her way here. Let us go to Everett and talk with MJ. MJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Question inquiry may fit right in with the last few callers, only this is, I've been having some discussions with one of my sisters, and she is a breast cancer survivor, I think 12 or 13 years, and she's in her mid-50s, and she's kind of upset that the, well, first of all, she was, you know, happy that she survived and was
absolutely
able to be treated, but now she's unhappy that it kind of ruined some parts of her life, and her husband's not happy about it either because their personal intimacy was affected by it from the drugs and all that. So and she feels like she's never recovered. I don't know what to tell her, but I thought, well, that's kind of up your alley.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just
trying to find out. We get a fair number of breast cancer survivors just because we tend to treat, you know, people over 40, and a frightening number of women in their 50s and 60s and 70s have had breast cancer at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. And one of the standard therapies is to block their estrogens. With a drug,
she did mention that.
Yeah, aromatase inhibitors or tamoxifen. There's a variety of ways to block it. And let me kind of explain why they do it and the limitation of this therapy. An estrogen sensitive breast cancer, which is the vast majority of them, by the way, is a breast cancer. It's breast tissue that underwent a mutation. See, young women have very high estrogen levels, and they have very low breast cancer risk. And as women age and their estrogen levels are dropping, breast cancer risk starts rising. And the lower the systemic estrogen level, the higher the risk of breast cancer. In many ways, an estrogen-sensitive breast cancer almost seems to be an estrogen deficiency disease. What happens to that breast tissue is it undergoes a mutation in which this breast tissue that normally thrives with estrogen changes because it's in an environment in which there isn't enough estrogen anymore, and it develops the capacity to make its own estrogen. And so this is now a cell population within the breast tissue that has grown its own ability to make growth factors and estrogen of its very own. And so it no longer depends on the body's estrogen for support. But part of this mutation is it loses all its growth controls and it starts growing rapidly. And that's why we consider it a malignancy, a cancer. It spreads and grows quickly. What we really want to do is to turn off the growth factors and the mitogen, the estrogen, within the tumor. But we don't know how to do that. The only drugs we've got that will turn off those growth factors and estrogen production within the tumor is to turn off all of the estrogen production in the whole body. Now, that's good when it comes to the breast cancer, because we've now inhibited the cancer's ability to make its own estrogens and growth factors. But we've also stopped the rest of the body from making its. And the rest of the body needs estrogen because estrogens are critically important hormones for human beings. Our brains don't work well without it. Our skin does not function well without it. Our blood vessels don't work well without it. Our heart doesn't work as well without it. And certainly the female reproductive tract, the vagina, gets dry and fragile and tender and painful. The bladder starts getting in problems. So when we turn off that estrogen, on the one hand, we are slowing or even stopping the growth of the tumor. On the other hand, we are preventing the rest of the body from getting the estrogens that it needs to function well. So women who have this therapy, they're taking a trade-off. On the one hand, you may well save their life. On the other hand, much of the joy of life is inhibited because memory often goes, verbal ability starts to be impaired, risk of heart attacks starts to rise, stroke risk starts to rise, the skin will age 10 years every year or two, the bones start to thin out, and osteoporosis becomes a big problem. Sex often becomes a thing of the past, both the desire and the capacity, because the vagina simply won't function well anymore. Bladder control becomes a big issue. So a frighteningly large percentage of women that go on these hormones to stop estrogen production stop taking it, won't take it more than 6 months or a year, simply because it makes their life so miserable. And that's one of the things the oncologists often don't discuss well enough. They don't explain that there are trade-offs here. You know, we are trying to save your life, but the cost is fairly high.
Alternatives?
Well, there are some things that can be done. There are studies actually showing that after some period of time, depending on the tumor, and it depends on how aggressive the tumor is and what stage it was found in, and what the therapy has been. But for many women with estrogen-sensitive tumors, just adding progesterone to their therapy will cut the growth rate of the tumor by about 50%.
Really?
Adding estrogen back in some women can be a dramatic improvement in their quality of life without raising the risk of tumor reoccurrence. There are different estrogen. Estrogen is not one hormone. Estrogen is a class of hormones. There are estrogens that promote tumor growth. There are also estrogens that do not promote tumor growth. And so, for instance, if people are having vaginal atrophy and painful intercourse and bladder issues, there is an estrogen we can use called estriol that we can apply locally that will allow the vagina to function much better, but doesn't turn into a chemical that the tumor can use. What the tumor needs to grow is something called estradiol. And estriol is a terminal estrogen that doesn't get converted to estradiol in any appreciable amount. So that is an estrogen that we often use with our women that are cancer survivors.
Do all oncologists understand this?
Most oncologists want women off all hormones.
Why?
Because their focus is the tumor. Their primary focus is, how do I kill this cancer? And everything else is kind of considered collateral damage. Most oncologists put 99% of their focus on the cancer and maybe 1% on the rest of the body.
Yikes.
And, you know, but the consequence of that is many women stop taking the recommended medicines.
It's just too miserable.
It's just too miserable, yeah. You know, it's like men with prostate cancer that go on, again, hormone ablation therapy. They go on similar drugs to turn off all of their hormone production. The suicide rate in those men triples. 300% increased risk of suicide because,
my goodness,
they're not dying of their prostate cancer, but life isn't worth living anymore. They literally rather die.
Can I interject a question here?
Sure.
Okay, in the beginning of your description, you said that adding progesterone is helpful.
For some tumor types, not for all. Again, you've got to, you have to see the pathology reports. You have to know what this particular woman's particular tumor is like.
Well, it was described to me by her, my little sis, as she had the type of tumor that did produce estrogen, and she had the type of, I don't know if it was different type, but also progesterone, both.
Yeah. Yeah, those tumors don't usually produce progesterone, but there are progesterone receptors in them. So if she has a tumor that has progesterone receptors, progesterone has a good chance of slowing the tumor growth. Because progesterone is, to some extent, an anti-estrogen. It has a very different effect from estrogens. Mm. So, but once more, that's something that depends on the particular tumor that we're dealing with. And, you know, breast cancer is not one disease. There are enormous variations in genetic propensities within different breast cancers. So, you know, when we talk about a general focus, quote, breast cancer, we're actually talking about a dozen different tumors with different degrees of malignancy, different rates of growth. So it has to be very much individualized to that person.
Well, she did approach her Cancer Care Alliance group and asked about getting some hormones back. It was several years that she didn't have any. And at one point, years ago, she did bring that up. She didn't come away with, I don't know all the details, but she didn't come away with anything satisfactory.
Yeah, well, and again, I can't answer for what anybody told her because I don't know exactly what her information and her situation is, and I certainly don't know what the physicians that saw her heard, thought, felt, had read. So that's one of the reasons we can't do diagnosis and therapy on the radio. We just don't have enough information. You know, we can talk about general principles, we can guide people in certain general directions, but I can't treat people here on the radio.
And again, that is the music we hear. We've got to go to a break. But thank you, MJ. I wish and we wish your sister well. This is just one more reason why longevity is doing so well and is helping so many people. So, again, I just encourage people to make a free health analysis appointment. That's the first little baby step that anybody can take, regardless of where you are in the aging process. Go to lmclinic.com to make your appointment. And when we come back, we'll talk with Tom and Chehalis about blood glucose metabolism. We'll be right back.
I'm in the longevity program in Linwood with Dr. Armstrong, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I realized why it's being very successful for me is that I feel like I have a personal coach.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. It was Stagger Lee and Billy.
20 minutes past the hour as I raised my chair for the 82nd time today. You know, the chairs that go up and down, there's something wrong with this one, and I get
the
up
pneumatic
here.
Thing it, gives
the,
way.
And it gives way, and
slowly
over
sink
about
the floor.
30 seconds, I'm 12 inches lower. Anyway, eating at the big person's table here. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Leading Edge Medicine. Let's go to Chehalis and talk to Tom. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom.
Thank you. Dr. Mixon gives more time than you probably get at your personal physician right now. Just
You're right.
I appreciate that.
And it's free. The price is certainly
Thank
right.
You.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm recently, within the last year, I got a A1C that kind of woke me up. But anyway, so I've been becoming obsessive with my blood glucose. And so I test myself frequently, and I kind of become a little lab rat upon myself. So I found that a low carbohydrate diet helps significantly. Mm-hmm. I've also found that that if I try to go back to carbohydrates, that over time my I found that my postprandial blood sugar will remain too high. And so what I mean by that is that I read on there it's supposed to be, well, after 2 hours it should be below 140. So, you know, I can't find any information about how high, if you eat a high carbohydrate meal, how high it can go and still be considered normal, or if you just have to wait 2 hours and it has to be at below 140. See, there's no good information about that, trying to research on my own self, and so, but what I have found is this: is that, and it kind of shocked me actually, is that, for example, a couple nights ago, my wife made this soup that had a lot of noodles and so forth in it, and my blood glucose jumped, and with bread, it jumped, within an hour and a half was up around 200, and I was like, wow, that, and so, but what I found is if I go and I do some sort of resistance exercise for just a short period of time, it drops it precipitously. So I went and I've got several different mechanisms. I got a Bowflex, I got these resistance bands, and I've got free weights. And so I go and I do some resistance training or resistance exercises, and it drops 50 points within 10 minutes. And then I said, well, you know, I'll try it again, see what happens again, and it drops again. So it went within a period of like 20 minutes from 210 down to 86. And I'm just wondering, is resistance exercise the medicine? Is there something going on that with this 200, I have to avoid carbohydrates altogether? But
let me ask you a couple of questions.
Be careful with my carbohydrates. And also one other thing, if you stay off the carbohydrates for a period of time, do the cell receptors for insulin, do they become sensitized again? And is exercise a medicine? Or is resistance training, have you ever noticed that it would drop precipitously after doing resistance training?
Okay. Yes. Working muscle burns sugar, and that's just all there is to it. The more muscle you've got, and the harder and longer it works, the more sugar you burn. Muscle is a energy-intensive tissue. Just by existing, it's burning sugar. So the more muscle you've got, the lower your sugar will generally run. Okay. That's just a kind of a rule of life. And the more that muscle works, the more it'll drive your sugar down. But what's your A1C? What's your hemoglobin A1C running?
Well, it started at 6.5, and then I went on a low carb diet, went down to 5.8.
Okay. You're still in a pre-diabetic range.
I kind of went away from that, and I said, well, you know, maybe if I just incorporate exercise, I can go back to eating carbohydrates. Well, I did that for a year, and I came back. I thought it would be, like, low, and I'm taking berberine, you know, I'm taking these supplements. I'm taking, chromium and alpha lipoic acid, and then it still came back at 5.8. So I'm just a little bit, it just kind of made me a little bit discouraged.
Okay. Well, the question is, obviously, is how much insulin is your pancreas producing and how much insulin resistance do you have? See, when we evaluate a new patient, we look at several things. I want to see what the A1C is. That tells me what your average sugar has run over the course of the last 3 to 4 months. Doesn't tell me your peaks or your valleys, but it tells me what your average is over a several-month period. But I also then want to get a fasting sugar. What happens to your sugar when you've gone at least 6 hours without eating? And then I also want to get with that fasting sugar, a fasting insulin. See what your resting, your fasting insulin level is. How much is your pancreas producing when there is no glucose load? Then we give the person 75 grams of glucose, of a simple sugar. And 30 minutes later, when they're at their peak, we recheck their insulin and their glucose to see how much insulin they're producing in response to this rising sugar. Okay? That will give me a good idea of how much insulin resistance there is. If you're having to kick your insulin production up near 100, and you're still got a sugar of 150 or above, you're in deep, deep doo-doo. You've got serious insulin resistance. If your sugar peaks at 130 and your insulin only goes up to 25, you don't have any insulin resistance. You are not going to become a diabetic.
Do you have patients like that?
Oh, sure. Sure we
do.
Do
you have patients like
okay. Absolutely. Sure. And so our goal is to correct the insulin resistance and to help the pancreas to respond as healthy as possible. So there's a lot of factors that we want to look at. But yes, what you're eating, how often you eat, how much you eat, these are all critical factors. What your percentage of body fat is. Body fat raises insulin resistance almost always, and high insulins trigger the production of body fat. Muscle mass is an important factor, so we look carefully at your anabolic hormone load, because as people age, their anabolic hormones tend to drop, and they're less and less capable of making lean tissue, which means you have less muscle to burn up that sugar. And the muscle you do make tends to be infiltrated by fatty tissues. You may have bulky muscle, but if a significant portion of that is fibrous fat instead of real muscle, well, we have a whole different situation. So it's got to be individualized. So, you know,
I understand.
What you're describing is not unusual. You know, in modern America with sedentary lifestyles, with increased abdominal fat, we see what you're talking about all the time, and it is usually correctable.
Okay, well, how about cell receptor sensitivity if you back off diet?
It can be reset, but what okay. You've got to do is drive down the peak insulin levels and keep
Which
them
I've done.
Low enough.
Well, I don't know about the.
Well, so
my,
you're talking
my,
sugar.
My fasting
There's a difference.
Insulin, because I have been exercising more, has went down from, it was at 11, 12, 13 a couple of times, and then it's gone down to 5. That's my fasting insulin. Now, I don't have a peak insulin because I haven't done this. They are not comprehensive enough anywhere other than your office.
Unfortunately.
That they would do something like that.
Yeah. Well, so, all I can tell you is our office is available. But,
yes.
Yeah.
I won't ask another question, but I just want to get your evaluation if you've heard of it, because you're in the longevity business. Have you ever mm-hmm. heard of a GlaxoCline medication that they discontinued or didn't even allow going? It's called Cartarine?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. It's not on the market now. And
no, but it's available.
You can sometimes get them, yeah. But you're not, I think you're going to have difficulty getting prescriptions for it most of the time. Your problem here is we've got to look at the underlying pathophysiology. What's causing you to run such high sugars? Because these sugars are way too high. And if these sugars are high because your pancreas is not capable of producing enough insulin, that's a whole different situation than if you're producing good insulin, but you're too resistant to it. And those, you know, both of them will give you the same high sugars, but the causes are very different, and the therapies have to be somewhat different.
Hey, appreciate the call, Tom, very much. You got in some good questions, and that was quite fascinating. That opens up a line, 1-800-465-8770. But I've got some good news. I've got Dr. Reuben Maiden on hold, and he will be next because earlier we had a question about testosterone and AFib.
Yeah, and I called and, or I texted him and told him that I had never seen a paper that would fit with what their doctors, and he's agreed to call in and chat about it.
So let's talk about testosterone with Dr. Reuben Maiden, our in-house cardiologist.
Well, certainly my favorite.
Well, not in-house. He doesn't work here. I kind of wish he did.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
I started playing in the Puget Sound Senior Baseball League when I was 51, and I started pitching. And the guy was my regular catcher for the 3 years before I started the program, was catching me one day after I'd started on the program. And he came out about the third inning and he said, dude, I don't know what you're doing, but you've gained about 5 or 6 miles an hour in your fastball. And I didn't go into thinking about longevity at the time, but I just kind of knew that that was what was making the difference.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me?
35 minutes past the hour, and earlier you heard us talking about Dr. Reuben Maiden. And Reuben, are you there, sir? We've got you, I think.
Hi.
Are you there, sir?
Yes. Hi, this is Dr. Reuben Maiden.
Hey, there you go. There you go, Jerry.
Okay. Yeah, we had a fellow call in, and he's had 2 episodes of atrial fibrillation, 63 years old, not obese. But when they were talking to him in the ER about his triggers, you know, what may have triggered these episodes, he told him that his naturopath had put him on a very low dose. I mean, it's 10 milligrams transdermally of testosterone. And they were saying, gee, that might be your trigger. And that kind of raised my eyebrows because, A, I use a whole lot more than that in most men, like 10, 15 times that much. And B, I've certainly never seen a paper saying that testosterone was a trigger for atrial fibrillation. Maybe a lack of testosterone, but certainly not a testosterone supplementation in some, you know, at these piddly doses. So I just sent you a little note and asked, have you seen a paper to that effect or have I missed something?
No, you haven't, Jerry. You're right. So testosterone and heart disease needs a lot more study over time to really show all of its effects and benefits. I think the concern that happened was that there was a phase where people were using high-dose anabolic steroids like testosterone, a lot of times athletes and bodybuilders, and getting to very, very high levels. Mm-hmm. And with that chronic use, people's hearts change over time and they can have atrial fibrillation from that. It's a very unique kind of toxic situation for testosterone. And but actually there's multiple studies now that show that when people have atrial fibrillation, men, and have low testosterone levels, that replacing their low testosterone reduces the frequency of atrial fibrillation or eliminates atrial fibrillation. So it's quite the opposite. Replacing low testosterone is healthy to prevent AFib. It's healthy for the heart. And I think that really the chronic high dose use, the toxic use of it, is something we want to avoid.
Sure.
But when we think about it, you know, why would replacing hormones be anything but healthy for all the organs in our body when we are deficient? And so so I'm with you. And I personally also have never seen someone just going on physiologic testosterone and then coming in with a new event of AFib. Of course, my experience is just limited to my own practice, but that's a lot of years of having not seen that occur.
Sure. Well, and the cardiology is all you do. So, you know, if anyone's going to see it, it's going to be someone like you. Yeah, the thing that you know, I look at, and I guess I want to share with our audience, this fellow was, I think he was talking about, he had a total testosterone in the 300-something range.
Yeah.
A healthy 18-year-old boy runs up to about 1,200. I'm normally trying to replace people in 600 to 800, you know, better than twice where this guy has been running, but about half of what a peak teenager would be. But the bodybuilders, they don't worry about levels in the hundreds. They are in the multiple thousands. You get the, you know, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers of the world, and they'll be running testosterone levels of 12 and 15,000.
Oh, come on, Beth.
Yeah. You know, four or five times higher than a peak 18-year-old.
Gee.
And that's why they've got bodies that look so bizarre with these muscles, you know, muscles on their muscles. Human beings are not supposed to look that way. these are hormone-created creatures, you know, and somehow this has become our ideal male, and it isn't. Healthy human beings don't look like that way. You know, your shoulders and chest are supposed to be broader than your waist, but they're not supposed to be three times broader than your waist. So...
All right. Hey, well, thank you, Ruben. We appreciate you calling in. We really do. We'll have to get you back here in the studio with us sometime soon, but we appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much for responding and calling in, Ruben. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always love the opportunity to provide some education, and thank you both. Take care.
Okay. All right. Have a good day. Bye. Thank you. All right. Let's take another call. Let's go to Kirkland and talk with Peggy. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help, ma'am?
Two questions. One, I would love to know a little bit about cataract removal. I'm 63 and I consider myself very healthy. I'm native to the area, so I've had good environment. And the second thing I want to know about, besides cataract surgery and when is the best time, do it early or wait until it's developed quite a bit. My second question is different about keto, and is that method a healthful way to lose?
Okay, well, two very different questions.
Yep.
Let me start with the cataracts, since that was your first question. Earlier is better. Used to be, when we had such horrible, old-fashioned methods of extracting them, and all you could have is those great big Coke bottle sort of glasses that gave you not very good vision, you know, and you had to just survive with these terrible glasses. Doctors would say, wait till they ripen, wait till they really, really, really interfere with your vision, because what we could give you in return was not all that great. So you had to wait till your vision was awful before you get a result that you liked. Basically, because what you were going to get wasn't all that great. Now, the whole world is different. Even before you've got dense cataracts, even when the lens is just turning colors, just getting yellow, and your low light vision is starting to go, they can replace those lenses so fast and smooth and easy that. And we can put lenses in that will give you great vision. The procedure is fast. It's maybe a 15-minute procedure from start to finish. They'll usually do one eye, and then a month or 6 weeks later, they'll do the other eye, just because if something should go wrong, you don't want to have both eyes at risk at the same time. But
yes,
you know, but generally, the complication rate is extremely low. The procedure is fast. It's easy. The results are stupendous these days. And I simply see no reason to wait.
Yeah, sadly, the old school tradition of, well, wait until it gets worse and it's really bothering you is still the norm most places. But we've had Dr. Michael Gilbert on here. I've asked him that question at least two or three times over the last year or so.
Let me give you my personal experience with this, because I've had my lenses replaced. I had terrible vision from childhood on. I was about 2200, had to wear, you know, thick glasses as a small child, and then I wore contact lenses from the time I was 16 till I was 60-something. And what I noted was my vision, even with my contacts, was starting to go bad in the evening. What really triggered it was my wife and I bought a new house, and I was trying to hang up curtains, and I couldn't see the screws in the dim light. They were black screws in dim light, and my wife could see them just fine, and I couldn't. And so I went in, and I saw the, you know, a first-rate ophthalmologist, and he took a look and did the films and the studies, and he said, your lenses are turning, have turned yellow, basically. You don't have the traditional cataract yet, but you're on your way, and that clear lens is now not clear anymore. It's turned yellow, and what you're effectively doing is you're wearing sunglasses 24/7.
Yeah.
And when the light is dim and you're filtering it through an already colored lens, you're just not getting enough light to the retina. So they went in, used a femtosecond laser to make the little incision, remove that central lens, put a fancy new crystal lens in there. This is a flexible lens that will change shape because it's actually in the capsule where my original lens used to be, and the muscles are still attached. And I can now read standard sort of print within about 6 inches of my nose, and I have 20/15 vision to the horizon. First time in my life, I have perfect vision, both for reading and for distance, both eyes. Each procedure was 15 minutes. Had to put a few drops in my eyes a couple of times a day for a little while, but it was a nothing. There was no pain. It felt kind of scratchy, a little irritated, like I had some grit or something for a few days. That was it. So, you know, my response is, why the hell didn't I do that 30 years sooner? Well, of course,
I did the same thing.
The technology didn't exist 30 years sooner.
Well, you know,
but the technology right now is so good, and the results are so great. I personally see no reason to wait. You just go to a first-rate doctor, somebody like Gilbert, and they can, you know, they'll do an evaluation. But unless they see a surprise, I'm going to bet anything you'll end up with beautiful new visions and perfect vision afterwards.
Oh, wonderful.
So,
thank you.
Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to have to do here, Peggy. We got to go to a break right now. We will do that, but I'm going to hang you over because I think you have another question about the keto diet. And so with your permission, we will put you on hold for about a minute or so.
Wait.
We'll do a little break, and we will be back with Peggy with her questions about the keto diet and with Dr. Mixon's response. I think that's what we want. That's why we're here. And we'll be right back.
I think it's a wonderful thing. It teaches at the seminar, and not reacting after the problems. It's trying to prevent the problems from happening in the first place. And the thing I like the most about everything that I've learned is it all makes very logical and intuitive sense.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Papaya, papaya.
And make believe it came from you.
Papaya, papaya.
I'm going to write words so, so sweet. They're going to knock me off of my feet. A lot of kisses on the bottom. I'll be glad I got them.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes to go here before the end of this hour. Quick reminder, we've got another 2 hours to go. And if you want to find out where we are from 10 until noon, go to our website right now at lmclinic.com. Push the podcast button at the top of the page, top right of the page, and you'll find out where we are for all 4 hours. And then, of course, you'll also have access to all of our previous hours.
Apropos of that song that you just played coming back in.
Yes.
Do you have a special love letter that Vicki sent you that you refer back to through the years?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't. You do.
Yeah.
I've got from Bending. Yeah.
From Bending, when she was living in Sweden.
Oh, okay.
And she wrote me. I mean, we emailed and we talked on the phone every day. But she sent me an old-fashioned snail mail letter.
Oh, really?
About a two-page letter.
Yeah.
That I not only have saved, I scanned it and saved it on the cloud so that from time to time it just strikes my fancy and I pull it down and read it again after all these years of marriage.
How about that?
So, yeah.
How about that? Well, that's cool.
Still knocks me off my feet.
Pleasant memories.
Yes, very, very much. Anyway, let's talk about the keto diet.
Okay. Peggy, are you back with us?
Thank you. I'm here.
Okay. Your question.
Well, I'd like to know if the keto diet is a healthful way to lose and if it's a healthful way to live.
Most of the time, for most people, it's fine. Let me just explain something about ketones. Okay. When your body is burning fat, you produce ketones. It's part of fat metabolism. So you are going to become ketotic and start spilling ketones in your urine any time your metabolism is so short of calories that you're burning fat. So in that sense, everybody who's on an effective weight loss diet is ketotic. They're keto, okay? The so-called keto diet is a diet that is so short on simple carbohydrates and so rich in fats that you become ketotic, not just because you're burning your own endogenous body fat, but because you're burning the fats that you're eating too, right? Because in order to burn those fats that you have eaten, you have to, again, produce those ketone bodies. They're an integral part of fat metabolism. So the typical keto diet is high in fiber. It's got lots of nuts and whole grains. It's got very little in the way of simple carbohydrates. It's usually high in fats and proteins. Okay. Now, proteins are an inefficient energy source. Your body has to burn a fair bit of energy in order to break that protein down to the basic amino acids and convert them to something that your cells can burn. So high protein diets are not very efficient energy producers. And that's why they are pretty darn good for weight loss, because you're not getting a lot of calorie, a lot of free energy out of it. Fats, on the other hand, do produce ketones. And that's why we call it the ketone diet. The biggest component for this whole diet, though, is to eliminate the simple carbohydrates, the bread, the rice, the pastas, the sugars, all of those things that your body will burn fastest and easiest, you're getting out of your diet. And when you do that, you're calorie short. When you come right down to it, though, in the final analysis, it's always a matter of calories in versus calorie out. Remember, a calorie isn't a thing. A calorie is a measure of energy, of heat energy. So when we say 1,000 calorie, this is 1,000 kilocalories of heat energy that you have consumed and that your body can metabolize. Right? So a low-calorie diet is a low-energy diet. And so your body has to, since you require a certain amount of energy to carry out your daily activities, if you're not getting enough from your diet, you burn your own body fat and sometimes your own muscle. So you become what we call catabolic. You are breaking down your own body to provide the energy to survive.
And then as we get older, the tendency is to burn our own muscle before we can burn our own fat.
Yes, yes. And so older people older people need about twice as much protein in their diet as young people to maintain the same muscle metabolism.
Yes, as long as you don't have kidney issues, you should eat more protein, which is very hard to understand, and people don't think it. And in fact, as they're eating less as they're getting older, they don't realize how much they're decreasing their protein intake.
Yep. Yeah, because you go to the restaurant and you see the senior meals that are half price. Well, they're also half size. And they do that because most older people fill up easy.
Yeah.
They don't eat as much as youthful people. Those young people have got a lot more muscle mass that is burning energy like a furnace, and they need the extra calories to come in. As you're getting older and your muscle mass is declining and your energy expenditure, just because you're less physically active, is declining, you need less energy.
Yeah.
So you tend to eat less.
And with that, I'm afraid I need to interrupt, but I'll introduce Dr. Samira Umat, who just mystically, magically appeared.
Hey, you guys missed me today. I'm so happy. Normally, Pete says, whoa, we're fine. But, thank you.
Peggy, thank you for your call and your comments.
Thank you for coming.
With that in mind, I want to remind everybody, I mentioned it about 2 hours ago, but you and I are doing Beautiful You this afternoon live. We've done it a few times live. And again, we will again today at 1 o'clock. But the big news is that starting next Saturday, we are at 11 a.m. instead of 1 p.m.
Yep.
All right. And next Saturday and thereafter. So we're making a major shift from the 1 o'clock hour to the 11 a.m. hour for Beautiful You. And what is Beautiful You, you ask?
It is all about you and how to make you better tomorrow, not just from the inside, but now from the outside.
It's sponsored, of course, by Bella Medica, which is the aesthetic division of Longevity Medical Clinics. And Beautiful You, basically, each program we take usually one or two different modalities, services. I'm not sure what you
aspects
have in mind for
aspects about this aging. Yeah, well, actually, we're going to cover a lot of good topics today. But it's all about not just on Leading Edge, you know, we do the inside. This is now about how do you make sure you look the best on the outside as well without surgery as you get older, because you'll be surprised at how much you can do. And it's now easily available. This field is just mushrooming, but you want to separate out the science from the silly, as we always say on Leading Edge Medicine.
Right.
And that's what we do here. We provide you with the scientific evidence of how to do it right.
And everything from, hair restoration, hair removal, both sides of that coin.
That's right.
Facials, PRP facials.
Yes, we're going to do face and body today.
Skin tightening.
Yes.
Skin tightening
is my personal favorite.
That seems to be. You keep saying that.
It is.
But, you know, brown spot and aging spot removal, tattoo removal.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things.
Yeah, the technology in tattoo removal is pretty fascinating. And the new technology is photothermal and photomechanical, which really creates a power wave. And you really want to know about that. We'll cover that today.
Today at 1 o'clock, it's live. You'll be able to call in and ask her any questions that you'd like as well. Really good things are happening at Longevity Medical Clinic, including Bella Medica, which is housed in our Kirkland facility. Today at 1 o'clock, starting next week, though, at 11 o'clock. Now, we've had some great, great calls today, and virtually every one of them showed perfectly why you ought to consider Longevity Medical Clinic. But you don't have to make a big decision. You can grab one of our free health analysis appointments. Easy, easy to do. You get two free tests, a blood test, and also our special in-body test, so that you'll understand what some of your basic health risks are. If you don't measure, you don't know, let us do it for you. Plus, we'll give you $100 of free longevity supplements just for coming into the health analysis appointment. Again, make your appointment at lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. Easy to do. Have a good rest of your weekend. And join us for the next 2 hours. Find us at lmclinic.com.